Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I am your host, Zach Moore, and we have two guests with us this week. We have Nick Ryan Mendoza. Once again, what's up, Nick?
Hello, not much. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. And we have a second guest. We have Taylor Evanoff. What's up, Taylor?
What's up?
So Taylor sent us a Facebook message telling us how much he loved the show and that Prodigal, which we're talking about this week, is his favorite episode and asked if he could be on. So, you know, the timing worked out and here he is. So glad to have you on, Taylor.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Prodigal is my favorite episode of Smallville. I can't objectively say it's the best because there's a lot of other way better written episodes, but this is my favorite for many reasons. One of them being the guest star this week, Paul Wesley.
Paul Wesley? Is that his name?
Oh, I forgot. I don't even know how to say his last name. His original last name.
Yeah, it's like Wasilewski. That's the best I can.
Something, yeah.
Since you brought it up, we'll talk about it. So this is the episode where Lucas Luthor appears, his one and only appearance, and we'll get into that later on. So he was born Paul Tomas Wasilewski. His name was Americanized a little bit because Powell was spelled P-A-W-E-L. And then so he Americanized his first name, and then he was Paul Wasilewski. I'm just pronouncing it several ways, so I'm sure one of them's right. But looking at it, it looks like Wasilewski. So when he appeared on Smallville, he went by Paul Wasilewski, but Paul being spelled P-A-U-L. And then finally, according to IMDb, in 2005, he began to credit himself as Paul Wesley. So, I can understand a lot of people have stage names and, you know, even not even actors, but even reporters and anchors and news stations and things like that. Some that's a little easier on the spell check, probably. So
easier to roll off the tongue and stuff.
Yeah,
and spell check around then.
2005. What are you talking about? Yeah. So Wesley, I mean, it seems like a shorter version of Wasilewski. It's not like he changed his name to like Paul Johnson or something. So are you a big fan of Vampire Diaries?
Yes, I'm. It's kind of like how you mentioned on the podcast before. You've like grown up with Smallville. Mm-hmm. While you're watching it, I started watching the Vampire Diaries in high school. And I don't really relate to them like they're Mike, like it's me. But I just grew up with the show and I followed it a lot. I follow Paul Wesley's work. So when I didn't know he was on Smallville until my first time watching it through. So when I seen him, I was like, whoa! And it was kind of just turned into one of my favorite episodes. And plus, he plays a Luther, which one of the best things about this episode for me is. Well, one of the best and worst things, because he never shows up again, is Lucas. I like the Luther backstory, and for him to show up is one of my favorite parts of the series.
You know, speaking of, when did you first watch Smallville? How did you find it, and how did you go about watching it?
It was about not this after I graduated high school, which was 2015.
Whoa.
I'm a youngster.
Nick, how old do we feel now, man? I swear.
Oof, man.
I'm a youngster, man.
I have my 10-year high school graduation reunion coming up this year. The Facebook group has already been made, and jokes are already happening. Why do we need this when we have Facebook? We already know what everyone's doing.
Oh, man. Yeah, I graduated in 2015. Mm-hmm. A little bit after, I was on a... I started watching the animated DC films. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, we know what you're talking about.
Oh, all right, cool.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching those, and I started watching – I started getting more and more into Superman, I guess. And when you look up Superman on Google, you see Smallville. I mean, well, you should see Smallville.
As you should.
Yes, right. You should. I remember asking people about it, and really no one I know has watched it because it's like – the generation before, it's not my generation, kind of. It's the one before it.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I put up some feelers on like the internet, and people recommended it. Said it was awesome. I started watching season one in the summer. I got hooked real quick, and I finished it within a month and a half, and a couple days.
The entire series. Maybe.
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. That is dedication.
Hey, man. No. Right out of high school, I had no job or nothing. I had free time on my hands, all Smallville, for the first month of summer.
Actually, I believe that because my younger brother, he watched the whole series of Friends in a summer, and it was right after high school. It was funny because I would go to his room, he's watching Friends. Right before bed, he's watching Friends. When he wakes up, he's watching Friends.
I'll be there for you.
And oh, and he's the type of person who doesn't like to skip the intro. So yes, I heard that quite a bit.
I never skip Smallville's intro. Yeah, I don't know why.
Smallville's intro is classic. That's like one of the only intros that I'll actually sit through these days.
Well, as we talked about before, the intro, it's a lost art form. Like, shows almost never have an opening credits like that anymore. So it's
Hi, I'm Barry Allen.
I'm the fastest man alive. Previously on the Flash. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's different.
Thing I hate about the Flash, it's that freaking intro, man.
He's not the fastest man alive. Every season, he meets someone that's faster than him. That's just inaccurate. So inaccurate.
Exactly.
So watching, let me ask you this, Taylor. Watching all those seasons in a month and a half, what are your like your favorite seasons of the show?
Probably, I like three the most because Lionel is like one of the best live action TV villains of all of television. I love that guy. Three is probably my favorite, followed by two. And then if I had to like narrow it down to three seasons, it would be three, two, and probably five. I like five a lot.
What are your feelings on season one?
I love it, but I don't. It's so. There's so many Freak of the Week episodes in which, with a lot of shows these days, I miss that because like Arrow and Flash are kind of like, they have those episodes, but they always have the underlying theme of the season in every episode. And Smallville didn't always have that in season one.
Right.
And so I like season one for that, but I also don't like season one for that. But I do like the season overall. It's really good.
Those would all be in my top five seasons. The top half would be, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, and 9. Not in that order necessarily, but those would be my top half if I had to rank the show. So, you know, I watched them as they came out over a 10-year span, so I have a very different viewing experience than you. So,
yeah. I noticed in the Smallville fandom that season 7 isn't one of, like, the favorite seasons. I actually like season 7, contrary to a lot of people.
Yeah. When you were watching it at the time, you've been waiting for 6 years, and here's season 7, and they bring in Supergirl, and it's,
oh yeah,
and it's like, what? He's not even Superman yet. And then of course that's the last season of Lex and Lana as main characters because Michael Rosenbaum and Kristen Kirk left the show, and they had the writer's strike that season. So, you know, as you're watching it, you know, at the time, it was a very interesting season to watch. But I'm very curious to revisit. Of course, season 4. We all know that I don't like season 4, and everyone else seems to love it and tell me how much I should love it. So I'm very curious to revisit seasons 4 and 7 because those two would probably be near the bottom of my, at the bottom of my rankings just off memory.
Yeah, season 4 is. I kind of share your opinion on season 4.
Thank you. You're one of the first people on here.
It's just a lot of. It feels so cartoony sometimes with the witch prophecy stuff, and it didn't feel like it fit Smallville.
Yeah, it's this weird in between because 1 through 3 have a certain feel to them, and then like 5, 6, and 7 are all, you know, kind of similar, and then of course, you know, 8, 9, and 10 have their own thing going on, the blur seasons, right? But season 4 is just this weird anomaly in the middle of everything. So, but you know, we're looking forward to getting there when we revisit it. But today we're here to talk about Prodigal. So let's get into it.
Guys, I want you to meet somebody. This is Lucas, my brother.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Lucas, you want to shoot some hoops?
Yeah, sure.
Ah, here you go. All right.
Didn't mean to drop a bombshell on you.
I thought he was supposed to be, well, dead.
Just buried by my father. I've been looking for him for several months.
Why didn't you say something?
Not because I wasn't sure what I was going to find. I got to straighten something out with the bank. Lucas, we have to get going.
Hey, you can hang out here if you want. Give me a chance to get to know him a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'll be back in an hour.
Here you go, Pete. So, you and Lex seem close.
What, are you kidding? They're like brothers.
So, Lucas, where'd you grow up?
All over.
Must be kind of weird not knowing your mom or your dad.
No, not really. Parents always try to make you little versions of themselves. When you grow up without those constraints, you're allowed to become your own person.
It's an interesting theory. I don't think I buy it, though.
All right. Let's take you and Lex, for example. If he was raised by your parents and you were raised by Lionel, you wouldn't grow up to be different people?
Well,
trust me. You'd be rich and miserable and he'd be wearing flannel. But if you were left totally alone, abandoned by your parents, how do you think you'd turn out?
I'm not sure.
It's when you find out what you're really made of.
Prodigal is the 15th episode of Smallville's second season and aired on February 11th, 2003. It was written by Brian Peterson and Kelly Saunders and directed by Greg Beeman. So this episode starts out and we see...
My people!
Yes, we see we see Lucas Luthor, who we come to know as Lucas Luthor. He's playing cards at a very obviously Asian casino or club of some kind. And I thought, okay, is this supposed to be in China? I mean, people are speaking Chinese. So I'm like, okay, this is their attempt to show us China, right? That's what I thought. But then apparently we learned down the road it's like Edge City. Like, which is...
Yeah, it was kind of anticlimactic.
Is Edge City a... thing in the comics? So, like a real city in the comics?
So in the comics, actually, Edge City is the home of the Mask. You know, the Jim Carrey movie, which is based off a comic book? That's where the Mask lives. So that's very interesting to me. You know, another thing that this opening reminded me of, Temple of Doom. Does this remind you at all of that?
Oh, yeah, it did.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Yeah, he starts out in this, Asian nightclub. Temple of Doom is underrated, by the way.
Kalema!
Kalima! You know, I think I might like it better than The Last Crusade, just because The Last Crusade it's fun, it's a great movie, but it's basically Raiders of the Lost Ark again, just Sean Connery, right? And Temple of Doom is like really different, and I think if it's so different, people didn't know how to take it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about that, actually. It's so different that I've always heard mixed reviews, like, oh, this is not the best one, but I actually enjoyed it. It was actually one of my favorite movies. It made me scared of crocodiles or alligators.
It's certainly not the worst one now. So anyway, and actually, Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage agreed with me. He said, I expected him to throw a flaming kebab into the poodle or some poor Oriental goon, jump out a window while shielding his body with a gong, then hit the canvas awning, tail short round to put it in drive, then go find Lousey Airlines. But anyway, that's of course from Neil Bailey's Superman homepage review, so that made me think of that. But Lucas Luthor, I guess he has an inside man with a bunch of hidden cameras in the casino, and he's sending messages to Lucas on his beeper, I guess. Talk about outdated technology, right? And is it really smart to have your inside man, you know, in the casino? Shouldn't it be like in a van somewhere, right?
Have your inside man on the inside?
Yeah. I mean, that's just, you think he'd be smarter than that. Looks like he's been doing this for a while.
That was so confusing. Like, why? Okay, so if he was an inside man, why was he set up in the casino in the first place? And why was he dressed up like a person from the casino? Like, it seems like he didn't even have to do that. Have a third person to do that.
Yeah, it was so confusing. Like, he looked like he was like a waiter or something, but he's like one room over.
That's what I was going to say. One room over in the building. Like, if it was like the building next door, I understand. And apparently a sound is made and you don't know what made the sound and they go in.
It is such a clumsy setup. But obviously, Lucas just needs to be exposed as being a cheater here, and that's what happens. So who are these guys anyway? They're like the Chinese mafia? Like, because of Arrow, I think these guys are the Triad. That's my headcanon.
The Triad.
This is the Triad, right? So Lucas starts running from it. And then, so this is when I really thought that this was really China, right? Because he's running in the streets, and there's just China everywhere, right? Everyone is Chinese. There's Chinese signs. Like, I understand there's like Chinatowns and stuff in cities, but this was like when we see China in season 4 of Smallville, it looks just like this. You know? I guess this is probably the Chinatown of Vancouver or something, right? Or
Chinatown of Vancouver.
So he's running around and then of course he like runs into a dead end. These guys are shooting at him. Lex Luthor shows up in a limo, tells him to get in. He's like, "Who are you? I'm your brother. Somebody save me!" You know.
No, and that's what I missed about, like, the intro songs, because it's like, it's all built up, and then the theme song that comes on, it just adds more to it. The suspense, like, oh, it's starting. These are the cold opens. That's what they're called, right?
Teasers.
Teasers.
Yeah. These are called teasers. The Office is more like a cold open, where like has nothing to do with what the actual episode. Yeah, but in the proper TV script structure, this would be called a teaser. Then Act 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So, what did you guys think about Lex showing up like right then, right now? Like, how did he know to be there?
Okay, so they wrote this out of it. He was the one who made the noise. He was the one who tipped them off. Let him know that someone's stealing.
Listen, Nick is a great justifier of these things on this podcast, I swear. All contrivances aside, an exciting start to the episode, right, guys?
Yes, a lot.
For me, I was thinking, oh man, this was actually one of the first episodes that I see a lot of action in the beginning.
And a lot of Asians, right, Nick?
A lot of Asians. I did ask myself, am I watching the right show? I had to check to make sure because, like, I don't recognize any of these people.
That's true. It's like, what am I watching, the Vampire Diaries here? What's going on?
No, you ain't, because there's no Asian representation in the Vampire Diaries there.
Really? There's not?
There's like one, from what I recall, there's one character in there that's Asian, and it's, Vampire Diaries is a poor, diverse cast. It's just not a diverse cast.
It's comprised entirely of ex-Smallville guest stars, yes. Oh,
okay. Basically.
No, it is. Adam Knight is the other lead.
Ian Somerhalder.
Yeah, Ian Somerhalder.
Batman.
Yep. The original Smallville Batman. Oh, I'm looking forward to talking about that guy in season 3. So we come back from the opening credits, and we're in the talent, right? And it's the next day from the previous episode, Rush. And you know how I know this? It's because we see the rose that Lana threw in the trash can last night, still in the trash can from the previous night. So that screws up this entire timeline, by the way. Because if you think about it, this is the next day. This means that Pete and Chloe are in the hospital and probably still should be, right? And where's the Lex timeline in all this? Because he was with Dr. Walden investigating the caves all this time. Like, when did that scene with Lucas take place? This screws up the entire timeline. And, here's my theory here. If you watch this scene closely, the shot of the rose in the trash can is an insert shot. It's completely isolated from all the other shots around it. The only thing that could tip you off to it is Clark kind of looks over to the side, and they insert that shot real quick. But that's the only time we see it. And I'm thinking, like, they decided to add this in post to, like, add an extra bit of sting to Clark. Because obviously it's an awkward situation with Clark and Lana because of what happened yesterday.
It could have not been trash day.
Well, I mean, how long is she going to keep this we were joking about that, me and Tyler Patrick in the last episode. Like, Lana just tells everyone to leave the rose there. Like, do not empty that trash can. Next time Clark quads in here, I want him to see that I threw it away. So, but okay. So
is the rose in the next episode?
It's still there. Yeah, keep checking. If we get the shot anymore. But here's the deal with this. Like, they just wanted to add an extra bit of sting to Clark, like being kind of rejected by Lana. But the whole vibe here between Clark and Lana is totally wrong. If this is the next day after Rush, right?
Very, very true. Because first off, if this was the next day, I'm not just going to go in and say, hey, can I just end up working with you instead?
Yeah. Remember yesterday when I asked you on a date and I made out with your best friend and roommate instead at your place of work?
Yeah, in the talent.
So, look, we're being pretty hard on this episode so far. Just so you know, Taylor, I like this episode. I do. It's going to get a pretty good rating from me. And on its own, like self-contained, I think it's a great episode, right? But when you try to fit it into this, like, what else is going on this season, the puzzle piece does not fit, you know, before or after, in my opinion. And stuff like this is why.
I see it, like, they do that with so many episodes in the whole series. When I go, and I rewatched it once all the way through after I watched it the first time, just to, you know, because you can't retain everything after your first time seeing it.
Yeah, especially not after a month and a half of 10 seasons.
That was a quick run through. But it happens with so many episodes, and I guess it's how how they reach their, they always put their bigger arc episodes in like the middle. Mm-hmm. Like there'll be like episodes 10, you know, your mid-season spots 10 and 9, 14 and 15, and then they finish off the season. I guess this was like, you know, it's episode 14, let's do Lucas Luthor, you know.
Right. Sweet February sweeps. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and
I guess they throw away all logic when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, this has happened a lot. Like, there's a lot of great individual episodes in season two, like Insurgents and Suspect, right? Those are great episodes, but when you put them next to each other, like, you try to think about what happened before and after, and, like, if this is really fit in this context, it's like, no, not really, but, you know, it's hard. Can you fault the episode itself for that? Not necessarily, but anyway, look, I just know we've been giving this a hard time so far. I know this is
and
your favorite
I enjoyed
episode,
the episode, so. Too, so...
As we kind of mentioned, Clark is applying for a job at the Talon because he's decided he needs a job. So fair enough, right? As you know, Pete calls him out on this later. He's like, could you be any more obvious trying to get a job at the Talon? But that's what you do when you like a girl, right? You try every excuse to spend time with her. You take. Now, had Clark not screwed everything up royally in the last episode yesterday, he wouldn't have had to get this job, but here, this is his way of working himself out of the doghouse, so to speak, I guess. So, but hey, at least he's putting an effort towards it, because after Red, he didn't really do anything to make up to it, Delana, other than stalk her and her potential new boyfriend in Nocturne. So, Clark is learning to be more proactive. So, our next scene is Lex bringing Lucas to see Lionel at Luther Corp Plaza. Now, there's a deleted scene that in here. Have you guys seen this deleted scene?
Probably. Just watched it.
Oh, there you go. Look at this.
I did not know. Yeah. Was it in the Hulu episode? Because
no.
That's
see,
what I rewatched.
This is why you need to get physical media, kids, because this stuff isn't, it's not on Hulu. It's not on iTunes. Okay. You don't get the deleted scenes and the commentaries and the special features and stuff. But, you know, on the Smallville DVDs, there's a scene, and it's Lex bringing Lucas to the mansion and kind of just them getting to know each other a little more. Lex is showing him around the mansion. This scene sort of establishes more of, like, Lucas and Lex, so it would have been good, but it also would have been more confusing because, as we find out, Lucas is playing everyone. Like, he's lying to Lex, he's lying to Lionel, he's playing both sides against each other. But basically here, Lucas is acting like, oh, so this is my dad, and what about my mom? Where can I meet her? I mean, he knows all this information already, so I feel like maybe that's why they deleted the scene. What did you think about it?
I like it because it explains his like no reaction to Lionel when he sees him. He sees him right here for the first time on that magazine or whatever.
That conveniently placed magazine, yes.
Yeah. And I like that it, like you said, I like how it shows him and Lex kind of bonding right there.
Right.
Because it really, there's only so much you can fit in this episode with them. And from the conclusion of what they do, you really don't get much development between them as brothers.
Right. I would have dropped the Clark trying to get a job subplot and had more of them together.
I wanted to save this for last, but the pacing for this episode, like the story could have been like probably at least two episodes long, because this was, I really enjoyed the story, but we'll get to that later.
There was so much going on, so I can see this scene, although it is good, as you said, Taylor, it's good, like, character building between the two of them. I can see why they deleted it, because ultimately it wasn't necessary, right? Obviously, you have to. This next scene we get between, you know, the three Luthers is necessary, but this one before it, you could probably drop it, and they did. So, and the episode, it, you know, it's fine without it. It doesn't feel like anything is missing, but it does. This scene is does add a lot to the episode. Anyway, the scene we do get is Lex bringing Lucas to see Lionel, and Lucas makes an observation about an Asian sword in Lionel's office, which I don't think we've seen before, have we, guys? I think that's newly installed. No. So what is Lucas's Asian connection? Like, because he knows, like, oh, it's the so-and-so dynasty, you know?
and we still think he has, like, some actual, he was actually in Hong Kong or China. So it was like, oh, okay, that's cool. He lived there for a while, but nope, Edge City.
Yeah, exactly. So, but... this is to show off Lucas's, like, keen observation skills, because he pulls out the sword, he takes it out, and he explains that it's a fake. So that's a good hint there that Lucas has a keen eye. And this comes into play in the next moment here, where they're all talking. The three losers are talking, and Lionel pours himself a drink, right? And remember, everyone, Lionel's still supposed to be blind at this point. And we see Lionel, he just pulls out a drink and pours it. But Lucas pays extra attention to it, and you can see he's like makes a mental note of it in his head. And we come back to that, building to the eventual reveal that, spoilers, Lionel's not blind after all.
It also makes him feel like a Luther. He's always looking for something to be a little fishy. Mm-hmm. Well, he's into, actually, because of the plot, and does it make sense or does it not make sense because of what happens?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the motivations are very confusing, though, right? Because, like, they're each playing each other. Well, Lionel and Lex both have Lucas there, and they're trying to use him for his own purposes. But so we have Lex say, of course, "So the prodigal son returns." Like, of course, any episode of any show or any movie where a sibling or a child who was missing for a long time shows up, that line has to be said, right? And of course, that's a plus one to our tally board for episode title said in episode, Prodigal. Lucas goes downstairs, and Lionel tells him, "Hey, the kitchen will make you whatever you want. Lex and I have some things to discuss." So we start finding out how exactly Lucas is playing into all this, because Lucas just turned 18, right? And we find out that any of Lionel's heirs have the rights to 10% of his Luther Corp shares, and it's the vital 10% to vote Lionel out of power. So Lex is staging a coup because Lionel has taken over LexCorp. So he's trying to get LexCorp back from Lionel, and he's using Lucas to do it because with this unexpected heir who has these new, 10% of stocks or votes or whatever this business Inc. stuff going on, Lex hopes that he can take back control of LexCorp from Lionel. So yeah, I think that's a good way to, like, why is Lucas showing up now? Because of course he had been built up to, I guess, even, if you really trace it back all the way to season one, the episode zero, where they talk about Clark's adoption with Metropolis United Charities, that goes into lineage, this season's lineage. And that's when we find out that Lex did have a brother, but Lionel claims that he had died. Of course, that's clearly not the case, because Lionel's not the most trustworthy guy. And this is the eventual, we actually see this guy. So there's been a long road to Lucas Luther here. So I do appreciate the buildup. It's not just we just found out about him. There's like this one episode. It'd be like, oh, well, that'd be kind of, half-assed. so there was a good buildup to this, and I think a good payoff as well. And the reason why we're seeing Lucas now is because just recently, just a couple episodes ago, Lionel reabsorbed LexCorp into Luther Corp. So now, Lex is just fighting to get his company back. So the timing does make sense, and it's not just out of nowhere. So they did put some thought into when he would reappear in the show. So they get Pete and Clark, shooting hoops as they do, having some guy talk, right?
Shooting hoops outside. That I haven't done that in a long, long time.
Once again, playing basketball in like their blue jeans and jackets, not the most comfortable. I know that some of our listeners have said, "Oh no, we used to do that at lunch all the time." It's like, okay, if you say so.
Yeah, but they're not at lunch this time. They could be comfortable with what they're doing at this. They're just having fun. They're not at school.
This is probably my favorite scene of the episode, or second favorite scene of the episode. Mm-hmm. I love this scene, especially when Lucas shows up.
Yeah, of course. So Lex brings Lucas by to get to know Clark, obviously, and Pete's there, so. Kind of drops a bombshell on Clark, like, "Hey, Clark, this is my brother." Clark's like, "I thought he was dead." And Lex kind of explains, nonchalant. He's like, "I've been looking for him for several months," Lex explains. And Clark is immediately, like, threatened by Lucas.
Yeah.
I didn't really... Taylor, you like this scene. What's your take on that whole dynamic there?
I like that Clark kind of looks at him, like, worried, because he does walk up, like, a arrogant... he kind of has that look on his face and stuff, and Clark just kind of looks at him like, what's your problem?
Who is this guy, right? Well, he's dressed kind of like the Fonz, isn't he? With his leather jacket.
That was then a really long time ago. That's called Happy Days.
Yes.
So just like, it really doesn't settle in, though, as soon as Pete says, which is one of my favorite quotes from the episode, they're like brothers, talking about Clark and Lex. Lucas and Clark just kind of share that look, like, and then kind of like sparks like a little competition through the rest of the scene.
Right, like, oh, you're my replacement or something, right? Although,
yeah.
Although it did seem out of character to me that Pete would say that about Clark and Lex, because Pete's always jealous of Clark and Lex's relationship.
Very
right?
jealous.
So that's just an odd thing to say. I wonder if he's just like stirring stuff up because he doesn't like Lex.
It would have been interesting too if he said it in a different way though. Like, oh, they're like brothers. Like, he was annoyed about it, but he did it.
Perhaps a different line delivery would have gotten the point across. But yeah, so then I guess in what's becoming an annual thing on Smallville, I didn't realize until I'm rewatching the show, we have our basketball scene of the season. You know, we're talking about Vampire Diaries. What is this, One Tree Hill now? But
I don't want to be anything.
They play a little one-on-one, and Lucas is playing a little dirty, right? So then Clark's like, okay, I see how it's going to be. And then he starts using his powers just a little bit, you know, and Pete's like, hey, Clark, just a game, man. You know, Pete, the voice of reason here. That's how
talking about out of character. I've never seen him. Doesn't he always get like all sappy about cheating with his powers?
No, good call. Good call. But then we have a whole like a no blood, no foul situation here, because they play the song about Burn Baby Burn by Ash here, and you know, it's like, you know, behind the game, it just makes it feel very like high school, like I was joking about in last season's Leech, like these basketball scenes where they just scream WV high school to me, and there's nothing
very,
wrong
very teen drama,
there's nothing wrong with that, because that's what this is, you know. But it's still so on the nose. And I love how when they have this moment at the very end where Lucas tries to stuff Clark, and of course, Clark is Superman, so it does nothing to him. And Luke's like, oh, we got in there, steel plate. I'm like, oh, Superman, Man of Steel, I get it. But the music comes to this abrupt stop, like right when he hits him. And I'm like, yeah, that's a nice touch. That's a nice way of, you know, enhancing the scene with the music underscore just cutting off like that right when Lucas hits Clark. I thought that was a nice touch.
Really snaps you out of the moment. Yeah. Like, you realize, wow, he just kind of, what did he do right there, anyway? Did he elbow him in the face? Because after Clark, you know, Tom Welling kind of like reaches for his lip or something.
I couldn't. It all happened so fast. Like it was hard. It was hard to see. So Greg Beeman had an interesting anecdote about this scene, actually, in Smallville, the official companion season 2 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. He's talking about this scene, and he describes it as, quote, "The moment I noticed Tom Welling become a leader behind the scenes as well as being the lead of the show, which is the best thing for a series. If the series lead is a selfish, self-involved person, it really is a disaster. We ran out of time shooting the basketball scene when Lucas comes in and plays with Clark and Pete. I had an hour and a half to shoot the scene, and Tom just stepped up. He pulled the actors together, told them what he was going to do, and in a matter of 10 minutes, he had choreographed the whole scene. Tom was almost like a quarterback on the fly, making it up. Even as a director, I wasn't in a position to make that scene happen in the time frame unless Tom did exactly what he did. He might have already become it, but that was the moment when I noticed Tom become the leader behind the scenes." So that's a cool story about Tom Welling, and shows that, you know, he'd go on to direct several episodes of Smallville. So, you know, that's kind of the genesis of him understanding that whole behind-the-scenes aspect of things. And I believe Tom Welling used to play basketball as well. So he probably had a better idea than perhaps Greg Beeman about what to do on the court there. So, but that's a fun anecdote from Greg Beeman there. So Lex had left earlier because he got like an important phone call, Luther business going on. And that's why, you know, Lucas had hung out with Clark and Pete for a bit. But then after this awkward ending to their basketball game, Lucas is like, yeah, I think I'm going to go. And Pete's like, okay, well, I'll give you a ride back to the mansion. So, man, I wish we could have gotten a scene between those guys. That's what I wanted to see, right? what are Pete and Lucas Luther going to talk about? They're going to talk about.
So they'll probably talk about the friendship between Lex and Clark. It's like, so how close are friends? And then they would start ripping into them. Oh my gosh, these guys.
Well, another layer of the conflict. We've been joking about the basketball scene, but there's another layer to the conflict and conversation here. And you know, Lucas quickly pulls out the whole nature versus nurture thing on Clark. He says, yeah, you think if Lex had been raised, you know, dirt poor, and you've been raised by, you know, a billionaire, you think you guys would turn out to be the same people? And you know, Clark is clearly on the nature side of things. He's like, no, I don't buy that. But, you know, we actually get to see this little thought experiment play out in season 10 when we see Clark Luther, and Clark is wrong. If Clark was raised by Lionel, he'd be a very different person. So that was an interesting point of, you know, I didn't even think about that when we came to season 10, 8 years later, that was actually, you know, a realization of this conversation they're having here in Prodigal.
He'd be arguably worse than Lex. Yeah. Ultraman or whatever they call him.
Yeah, you know, they actually do call him Ultraman. Lionel has one line of dialogue, kind of throwing a bone to the comic fans out there about the crime syndicate version of Superman. So, thanks, season 10. So then we cut to the talent, and Chloe stops by to see Lana going through applications. Lana has pretty much said, well, Chloe sees that Clark's name is on one of the applications, right? And Lana has decided that she's not going to hire Clark. And Chloe convinces her to give him a chance because, you know, bossing him around the torch is the highlight of her day, which I found very amusing. but again, guys, if this is the next day after Rush, this is not track at all. At all, right? Chloe should still be in the hospital. She still have those black highlights in her hair, right? Gone, right? I guess when she bleached her hair back when she got out of the hospital. And, you know, Lana and Chloe, there should be much more tension going on. Like, I don't, again, this is all ruined by the fact they put in that insert shot of the rose in the trash can. If that wasn't there, you could say this was a week later, 2 weeks later, you know, because there'd be nothing to tie it immediately after the last episode, right? But since there is, like, all these, like, I'm trying to fit into my under the continuity, and all these red flags keep popping up. So, not to keep harping on that, but I just feel like they should have put that stupid shot in there, the flower. Because as everybody knows by now, we love What Day Is It on this show.
Yes. Oh, I was thinking about that myself.
Like, it can be no clearer what day is it than the day after the last episode. Than that rose in the trash can. So.
No, yeah, I was wondering what day it was, because they do a couple of, like, random shots at the talents. Like, did they not? Is this summer? I think I'm lost myself. Is it summer right now? Because did they not go to school at all? This 18-year-old kid shows up. He doesn't have to go to school. I guess he's out of high school. But I was just more just thrown off by, like, what day of the week is it again? Because I feel like everything went across of, like, a whole week or 3 or 4 days. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, a lot does happen across this episode, but it's hard to gauge how much time truly passes. But, you know, Lex returns to the mansion and finds all his accounts frozen, and Lionel is there. Apparently, Lex had put all his assets in the LexCorp, which has now been reabsorbed into Luther Corp, and everything that was Lex's now belongs to Lionel. So Lionel kicks him out of the mansion, and Lex says, oh, well, this won't last long, Dad, once Lucas and I vote you out of power. But twist, Lucas is on Lionel's side. And they had this going on behind the scenes the entire time. And, you know, this is a great scene, with the Luthers. Whenever all three of the Luthers are together, this is a great scene because Lex thinks he's been betrayed here. And he's like, you are incredibly naive. You think you can trust him. I love the interplay between these three guys here.
This is the first time all three of them have, like, that tension throughout the episode. It sets things up for later. This is the big, I don't know what to call it, the big turning point of the episode where, like, Joel makes the first move.
Because, you know, the first scene with the three of them is they're all meeting, all these pleasantries, right? But then this one is basically where Lucas has supplanted Lex. Like, Lionel's like, okay, good. Well, I found a son who will not defy me, you know? So you're out, Lex. Lucas is in. Have a nice life, basically. Because after this scene, Lex, he's been disinherited as well. So he comes to the Kents and says, hey, I have nowhere to live. Can I stay with you guys for a while? You know, and of course we, like, zoom in on Jonathan.
Everyone looks to Jonathan.
Like, huh?
which we get an immediate payoff for, because we go to commercial and we come back and we see Jonathan looking out the window in the morning and seeing Lex do some chores. And I just love the expression that John Schneider has on his face. Like, you can just, you know exactly what he's thinking. He's like, yeah, but this got to work. You know, that was so
he
good.
He admits it later, too. So,
yeah. You know, Martha comes over to Jonathan. He's like, Jonathan, we can't turn our backs on Lex now. And he's like, believe me, I have no intention on turning my back on Lex now. But because he's right, because he reminds Clark, he's like, Clark, let's not forget. Then he investigated you for a year. I do not want him left alone on this farm. Because remember, we have a spaceship in the storm cellar. And unbeknownst to everyone else, there's an octagonal disc under the sink. So if only Lex knew that, right? But anyway, Lex is, he's doing all these farm chores. But he's still wearing his Luther clothes, right? Is that not odd to you guys? He's wearing that gray sweater, like baling hay and all that?
He's not sweating the money.
Well, apparently no one likes to change clothes in this show. So they all have the same clothes. That's playing true. Basketball.
It's called the red shirt. It's called the wardrobe budget, Nick. man, it would have been funny. I don't think we ever see Lex, like, in a flannel shirt in this entire show, do we?
Does it happen in Lexmas? That's where he's kind of the humanized yeah. episode of Lex, right?
I think he just has like a sweater again, though. You know, it's like the Lex casual is like the sweater, right? Lex is doing these farm chores, and he tells Clark that, you know, he wants to prove himself to Jonathan, you know, once and for all. So they're aware of the dynamic that's going on here. Of course, Lex tells a story about, you know, before my mother died. You know, maybe we should have a tally board for that. Right? Lex stories about his mom, right? That he talks about how, you know, the Luthers had a farm that they went and stayed on, and everyone pitched in and did their work. And Lex said it was the only time he ever felt normal. So he's tapping into that to get all the work done. But, man, I hope he at least changed his shoes. He's doing all this. But it's interesting juxtaposition here. So we have Lex here on the farm doing this work, and then we cut to Lucas playing video games in the mansion on the like this big screen TV. it's slowly personalizing the mansion to his own taste.
And I was curious if that game was actually like, because, you know, sometimes they try to show video games in a show, like if they actually matched. But I didn't recognize the game at first, so I don't know if the controller matched.
I was gonna ask you, Nick. You would be the one to know. So.
I will get back to you shortly.
Yeah. Okay. Like right now during this conversation? No.
I will look at it very briefly. I'll just do a little bit of research.
Carry on. Well, Taylor and I will take over. You do some research. Get back to us on that. So
I didn't pay attention to the game, but I was kind of more surprised at how he's got the TV in like the middle of the room,
right in front of the door. Right? And of course, blind Lionel like bumps into it. You know. I just love this little moment here. He's like, "Hey, Dad, what's up?" And I just love the way John Glover says it. He says, "What's up is that you need to sign this contract."
That was actually, I didn't know if he was acting, because that was a great, like, because that actually made me think that, oh, man, he's really out of touch.
Yeah. So during this exchange, Lucas gives us a big exposition dump about how he tricked Lex, played along with Lionel's request, who had obviously found him, you know, or never lost him. You know, we get more explanation of that later. He was to be given $10 million to walk away. But Lucas wants more. You know, he did some research on Lionel. He finds out that he's a lot, you know, more wealthy than he may have thought, and he wants more than $10 million. But then he questions Lionel. He's like, "Why didn't you try and find me before I was 12? So now we're finally getting some context about, you know, when they first started the relationship. Although, I think that kid in that picture we see in Lineage looked a little younger than 12, and I'm terrible at guessing the age of children these days. So they had some back and forth here, and after some pleading, Lionel finally gets Lucas to sign this contract saying that, okay, I'm going to get my $10 million, and then I'm going to walk away. And I guess Lionel's concerned about a scandal here, huh, with Lucas existing? As if scandals matter anymore. I mean, look who the president of the United States is, but anyway. So this is great. Again, Lucas, he had noticed the glass earlier about how Lionel poured his drink. We're not clued into exactly what he thought, but we, you know, that's been brought to our attention. And now he takes the contract and he signs "bite me" on it. It's like where his signature should be. And then we cut to Lionel. He clearly has a reaction to it. So he can clearly see that Lucas did not sign it properly. And Lucas just keeps egging him on. He's like, "You know, I'm going to have your lawyers check that out." And Lionel's like, no, I'm sure everything is in order, right? And so all credit to Lionel, he is sticking with it, right? He is not going to give in. And then finally, when Lionel's walking out, Lucas picks up a pool ball and throws it at him, and it breaks the stained glass. And Lionel's like, "What the hell are you doing?" It's so good.
I thought that was ingenious. I thought that was, because the way that the episode sets you up, it's he's realizing, well, he's figured out that he's really not blind, and it was like, finally, this is the easiest way to do it. I was actually going to give him a little bit more props to Lionel if he took the hit.
You get hit by a pool ball at that close proximity? Man, I've been hit in the face by a baseball once. That was bad enough. If you get hit by a pool ball, that's like, oh my gosh. Keeping up with the facade was not worth it at that point. I think Lionel made the right call there. But even then, like, Lionel's not sure how he's going to play it, right? Because, you know, Lucas walks up to him, he takes the sunglasses off, and he's like, "You're not blind," you know, and he walks through how he deduced it, you know, about how a blind man puts his finger on the inside of the glass so he knows where the rim is. So that's good to know. Like, if I ever go blind one day, that is good life lessons from Smallville that I will apply to my life. that always put your finger on the inside of the glass when you're pouring a drink. And then, of course, he mentions the signature that just happened. So I like how we see, you know, it's very Luther, right? He sets up Lionel in all these situations, and then he makes his ultimate conclusion, like, look, this guy's not blind, right? but Lionel is still, he's still not sure how he's going to play it until Lucas, like, rips the sunglasses off his face. And then we finally see Lionel make eye contact with Lucas. And then he's like, oh, he's back. Lionel's back. This is the end of season two here. And then season three, like you were saying earlier, Taylor, this is like prime Lionel at his finest of the show.
Yeah. This scene is awesome. His eyes, like when he turns his eyes to Lucas. That's mm-hmm. my first time watching. I kind of like said out loud, whoa, that's how I felt.
Well, Lionel tells Lex a certain time range when he got his sight back at the end of the episode. We'll wrap back around to that. We can discuss some theories there. We cut to the Talon, and Lana has hired Clark. I guess Lana and Chloe both decided they're going to get off on bossing Clark around. Kristen Couric had an interesting quote about this episode and, again, The Companion. Tom and Allison had to serve coffee at the Talon. I'm a klutz, but they were terrible. Coffee spilled everywhere, and it made me feel a lot better. So that's good to know. Anyway, like, as Chloe goes on to say later, I drink coffee. I do not serve it. So while Lana is hiring Clark here, Lucas comes by to announce ownership of the Talon. And this is like always a thing, right? In Heat, when Lex is under the influence of Desiree, or in Onyx, when Lex splits into like good and bad Lex, there's always some kind of like, oh, we're shutting down the Talon, you know? And it's an old trope, Smallville. Come on now, guys.
This kind of reminds me of Lex in the, you know, like you said, when he turns bad, this is what made me feel like Lucas was a real Luther when mm-hmm. he comes in and does stuff like this.
Well, but he doesn't threaten to do anything yet, though, right?
Oh, this isn't that scene. No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. Like he's like, well, I own everything now. And they're all like, okay. There's no chance. Now, like two scenes later, they do that. So I feel like they should have wrapped these together, like as cliche that might have been. Like, by the way, I'm the new owner and I'm shutting you down or something like that, right? But then he just shows up to like, all right, well, everything that was Lex's is mine now. And they're like, all right, carry on with your day. Thank you.
That was probably just to like point out to Clark that something fishy was going on, probably.
Yeah, and it does escalate the rivalry between Clark and Lucas. You know, every Clark is just not catching on. For somebody who's supposed to believe in people, Clark sure is suspicious about every guest star. You know, every boyfriend of Lana and Chloe. You know, every family associate of Lex's. You know, Clark just does not trust people in Smallville.
Well. If you think about it, though, he has reason to be suspicious because every single time there's a new guest star or there's a new boyfriend, something is up. So
there is a precedent for it. And that guy just tried to stuff him in their one-on-one basketball game. So not cool. Not cool, Lucas. Yeah. So, Clark takes these concerns to Chloe at the Torch. And, of course, she says, the prodigal Luther son returns. You know, okay, she says the title again. So we don't count double. For that, I just wanted to point it out that they say prodigal again. That would be unfair to do that. But this is what I'm talking about. Clark, he tells Chloe, I don't trust Lucas. I think he's hiding something. I'm like, you are such a hypocrite, Clark.
That's probably why he doesn't trust anyone, because he doesn't trust his own secret to people. So he knows he has a secret, so other people might have a secret.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have a problem with him having the secret, though.
No, but he has to feel like, oh, I'm better than that.
Listen to this guy. All
that's how it
this
looks.
Guy. Fanboy justification from Nick. But anyway.
It's how it looks. But he really is, most of the time, better than them. So, I mean, it could be argued.
It's true. I mean, he's proven right every single week on his show, to your point.
That's very true. He has a reason for having that big of an ego. So.
Chloe connects some dots here for Clark, which shows that someone wanted Lucas to be found. Like, you know, these records of where he was and all that didn't appear until quite recently. You know, because as we remember, Chloe had been digging into Clark's adoption and found Lucas's biological mother back there in lineage, so she would know. So this is, you know, this points out to Clark that, you know, it might have been a setup. So Clark takes this information to Lex, who storms off from the barn, presumably to go do something about it. This is where he says, I've been playing checkers, my father's been playing chess. That's where he has that great line. Which, I don't know, I want to say that I've either heard that expression before, or they've used it in Smallville before, or a combination of both. But, you know, that's one of those phrases that you do hear a lot. But it's a good line. It gets the point across. Question, though, did Lionel let him keep a car? Because where's he going? Like, is he gonna go borrow the Kent truck or what? Like,
well, maybe he actually bought that car, and I don't know, because all of his assets was given to him, right?
It's very vague, you know. It's like, oh,
it's like, how does he have clothes to bring with him? Like, how does he have stuff to bring with him? I guess his dad was decent enough.
He wasn't gonna make him leave his clothes.
Well, if you. Then he might have just been nice enough to give him a car. It was, maybe it's like, until you come to your senses, you can always come back. He was setting him up as the prodigal son.
Yes, exactly. Look at you, Nick. Well done. Tying it all together. So, you know, we come back to Luther Mansion, and Lucas has made some updates. He's got like a workout machine going on in there.
I thought there was going to be a salmon ladder. I was like, what is this, the Arrow?
Yeah. he's got, you know, of course, the big screen TV. I'm sure there's a big boombox in there because it was the early 2000s and those were still in vogue, apparently. But, you know, Lex comes by and he tells Lucas, you're feeling pretty good about yourself right now, aren't you? And this is said the exact same way he said it to Roger Nixon back in X-Ray. Because I remember that so well because that's one of my favorite Lex scenes. Like, Lex is like pure Lex, right? Convict Lex in that scene where he disconnects his cell phone, he closes his bank account. Such a badass Lex there. But that's the same kind of angle Lex is playing here with Lucas. And he tries to get at what Lucas is after, but he doesn't really get any information. He does threaten to call the gang in Edge City to kind of heighten some tension there. So, you know, I guess, you know, Lex's whole deal with Lionel is he just wants to be loved, you know? Really, like, ultimately, that's what he wants, and he's never going to get it. But he's wrong to assume that's what Lucas wants as well. Because he kind of hints it. Like, you think if you stick around long enough, he's actually going to love you? It's like, well, I don't think Lucas is after the same thing as you, Lex. So Lucas, you know, in response to this, Lucas shows up at the Talon to fire Clark because, you know, he knows that Clark and Lex are tight, and he wants to kind of get back at Lex for, you know, trying to stir stuff up. Also, Clark was 30 minutes late to his shift, which doesn't help. Lucas has a completely legitimate reason to. He's like, well, he was 30 minutes late to his shift, and I'm firing him. She's like, well, I'm not going to fire. And Lana says, well, I'm not going to fire Clark. He's like, well, I'm going to fire you. And Lana's like, well, you can't do that. Lex made sure of it in our partnership agreement. And he's like, oh, all right, well, I guess I'm going to close down the Talon then.
For somebody who can travel really fast, the fact that he could be late 30 minutes, I was just like, what was he doing again? Was he helping Lex?
I don't know. Maybe he truly was. That's what Lucas insinuated.
Yeah, that's what he insinuated. But I'm like, 30 minutes late, I would have just like sped over. Hey, I'll be right back. And then speed right.
That's the whole joke, though, right? Barry Allen, the Flash, he's always late to things because he's the fastest. It's so funny. He's like, yeah, we get it. Okay. But, you know, Lucas storms out the back and Clark goes to follow him. And then we get some very blatantly Asian music here, don't we, Nick?
Yes. It's
like, to really communicate to us, it's the gang from the beginning of the episode. Yeah, we get it.
And it's like the whole typecasted Asian guy on a motorcycle with an Uzi. Like, think of Fast and the Furious. That's like the same thing.
Smallville, Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift. There's always, it always has to be Asian person on a motorcycle with a machine gun. Like, I need to look up this trope to see where this came from or where it first started, because obviously this is the way it goes.
Are you telling me you do not have a motorcycle and an Uzi, Nick?
I do not.
But yeah, it's like, come on, guys. We get it. You know, we get it. That's the problem when you, yeah. I know, because we were talking, you know, Nick and I were joking about, like, what's another good episode I can be on? Like, I want to be on with some Asian representation. And I was thinking, I'm like, well, I know there's that gang in Prodigal, but that's the best I can think of.
Well, so I did recognize that actor, though.
So yeah, the character, Dirk Lee, he's, I guess, the leader or one of the main guys of the triad, which is what I'm going to call him, in Edge City. The actor who plays him is Zin Shane Lim, and he's been in Falling Skies, he's been in Fringe, he's been in a show called Samurai Girl, which I'd never heard of before. He was in Da Vinci's Inquest. Flash Gordon. The Eric Johnson's Flash Gordon. Oh, he was in Dark Angel as well.
Oh, that was one of my favorite shows.
I had not seen him in anything else. I mean, he's wearing a biker helmet in the majority of his appearance.
That's
so
true. I recognized his eyes, though. That but was Wes actually. He was like, I think I know that guy. And I looked it up. I was like, oh, I do.
He is truly the only other real guest star of note, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a really cool save here, though, because he starts shooting at Lucas in the alley. Again, how did he know he was going to be here? Much like Lex at the beginning of the episode, right? But whatever. It's for good drama. So now I'm just nitpicking. So he starts shooting the Uzi at Lucas, and then Clark sees all this. So they get this really cool shot of Clark super speeding up to the bullets, knocking one away bullet by bullet, and then eventually tackling Lucas to the ground and stopping the last one with his hand on Lucas's back. So this is a really cool super save, I thought.
Physics, though. There's no... So he's shooting the bullets in the opposite direction. I'm hoping it didn't hit anybody. And as well as tackling him, there's no speed force logic there to keep him from falling, because he's going as fast as the bullets, right?
Well, Superman and physics do not mix, okay?
Because from what I understand, the reason why it works on the Flash is because the speed force actually, like, whoever he's touching also transfers to him, so they don't die. But I didn't understand that scene. I'm actually really surprised when the Asian guy was thrown off the motorcycle, he didn't get up and started doing kung fu. But like, because that always happens. I thought there would be at least a fight, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, there is. It's funny. It's funny you say that, Nick, because there's an episode of the X-Files where they're tracking down like a bad guy Asian equivalent to Mulder and Scully, right? Mm-hmm. And they knock the gun out of his hand, and then he immediately starts like doing kung fu. It's like, oh, well, he's Asian. He must know karate. But no, I totally know what you mean. But he didn't. He just kind of, you know, oh, because Clark knocked him off the bike as well, right, by the way. So
yeah. Yeah, he's flying like 30 feet in the air in the background of the save shot.
But then he's fine, right? He just gets back on his bike and drives off. Again, Clark being the better man, he's had this rivalry with Lucas. Lucas just tried to fire him, threatened to close down the Talon. But Clark saves his life anyway. Lionel and Lucas are talking about this. Now we finally have, you know, full-on Lionel. He's back now. It's great to see him. He's not wearing this goofy sunglasses anymore. And they're having a straight-up conversation. And Lionel tells Lucas, you wouldn't be a Luther if someone wasn't trying to kill you. And I'm like 90% sure Lionel has said that before to Lex. I don't know where or when, but I'm 90% sure he has.
No, I'm sure he had to. I don't know where or when, but it sounded familiar when I heard.
And then yet another quote on the Lionel Luther soundboard. He tells Lucas, because Lucas is like, man, it was lucky that Clark Kent was there. And Lionel's like, Clark is a very special young man. He says that like every other episode. But so good. But Lucas seems to think that Lionel set up the hit. And he might be right. So what would you guys think? You think Lex set this up, or you think Lionel did?
Well, by the end of the episode, you have to think Lionel set it up, right?
Yeah, well, he clearly had no problem killing Lucas, so.
Yeah, so I think he set it up, and this is what put Lucas to Lex's side.
Yeah.
For the end of the episode.
I honestly think Lionel did, too. Because even though Lex did say, oh, I'm going to talk to your friends in Edge City, I think that was more of an empty threat. It didn't feel actually like a real thing, because I think Lex already knew that it was he had lost, and there's probably nothing that he could do. And the fact that there's a trust between Lionel and Lucas was probably a good measure for Lionel to actually do it.
And then Lionel was automatically trying to turn Lucas's attention towards Lex. He's like, oh, well. You think Lex is just going to sit here and let you take over everything that he had? Oh, for sure. He's the one that called the gang. So he again, in classic Luther fashion, he's trying to play his sons against each other. But yeah, no, I agree with you guys. I think Lionel's the one who set it up. So we cut back to the Talon, and Clark is, you know, he's working. He's got an apron on, which is a big LOL. It's to see him wearing a Talon.
It was a red apron, though, right?
You know, I think it was a green apron or a turquoise apron. I believe
there goes my colorblindness on my side.
But Chloe shows up to tell Clark that the shooter, Dirk, had died in custody. This is a huge red flag. So he hands off his tray to Chloe and asks her to cover for him. And this is where she's, I drink coffee. I do not serve it. And Lana sees all this go down. And we just see that she's like, yep, that's pretty much what I expected. So the Clark's days at the Talon, pretty much done at this point. Why Clark feels the need to rush off here, I'm not too sure. Like, what is the urgency of this situation? What do you guys think?
He feels like, I guess he feels like Lionel killed the guy, because he goes to see Lionel after, right?
Right, so he storms off to confront Lionel, and this is Lionel just, like, lounging on the couch, right? And then Clark walks in, and he has to pretend that he's blind. He's like, who's that? Who's there? Since Lex doesn't live there anymore, Clark has to barge in and accuse Lionel of a crime. Clark obviously has no proof of what's going on. Lionel, you know, basically says good night, Clark, and dismisses him. Then he says, send my regards to your mother, which is
that is so
I love
that Luther move right there.
I love that they keep that thread throughout the entire series. Even in season 10, when they bring back Lionel from Earth 2, he has an episode with Martha. It's so good. But yeah, while all this has been going on, Lucas has gone to the Kent farm to kidnap Lex. You know, and Pa, Kent, and Lex had actually had a nice, like, bonding moment there. Pa Kent pretty much admits that, I gave you every crappy farm job I could think of, and you never complained once. And so they have, like, a, you know, a mutual respect yet again. It's always a huge back and forth with these guys, right? They 2 steps forward, like, 3 steps back with them. it's good to see them on good terms. We'll see that inevitably will fall apart again soon, I'm sure. But it's good to see that they've, you know, at least Jonathan has a newfound respect for Lex I don't think he had before here. But unfortunately, this nice moment is cut short when Lucas pops up behind Jonathan and knocks him out with the butt of his gun. It's like, man, that's going to cause some brain damage.
Do they ever follow back up and check on his dad? Like, does he ever show up later in the episode? Like, oh, I'm okay, guys.
No, I think they pulled a Pete from Visage where he just left to die in the hallway. I think it's a similar situation. There's only so much time, guys. There's only so much time in the episode. Meanwhile, obviously, Lucas has kidnapped Lex and then calls Lionel to tell him about it. And Clark overhears this phone call when he's leaving Luther Mansion. He hears that Lionel says, oh, okay, my office, half an hour, meet me there. Like, thank you for being so specific, Lionel, and repeating what he said. But what do you guys think about this? I think that Clark, this is another instance of Clark having superhearing without him, like, getting the power of superhearing yet. I always thought superhearing was, like, much like his strength and speed, something he just always had, like a better reflex, a better sense, an enhanced sense that just got stronger as he got older, you know. But then we have that stupid episode Whisper in season 3 where he gets his new power, probably the worst new power episode in my opinion. Unless you want to count Echo in season 8? Season 9? You know, with the toy man where you can read people's minds? You guys know what I'm talking about? He doesn't even get to keep that power, so that's probably the worst one.
Is Whisper where he loses his sight?
Yes.
He looks like Matt Murdock?
Yeah, for about 20 minutes, he has Matt Murdock. For about 20 minutes, he has, like, really wireframe glasses. You know, like, oh, it's Clark with his glasses. And then he's fine at the end, and nobody talks about it. Although, I will say, and, you'll find this out when we talk about Whisper, I got my glasses around that same time. Just because it's a back and forth, you know. Smallville is my life is Smallville. It's a symbiotic, inappropriate relationship I have with the show. But anyway, moving on.
Symbiotic, inappropriate relationship. Sorry, those are really good.
And here I am doing a podcast about it all these years later. So what do you guys think? Would you have rather super hearing just been something he had, or did you like how it was, now I have super hearing?
Well, he hears through that door. Is the door closed?
Yeah, I don't remember. The door's closed, and he's, like, down the hallway, so.
What is that door made out of? Isn't it made out of, like, he shouldn't be able to hear through the door if, like, doors are closed.
It's like oak wood or something, you know, powerful doors. So that's what I'm saying, though. I think maybe they just didn't know how they were going to do super hearing yet, and every now and then they wanted to, like, Clark find something out. Like, I remember there are a couple other instances. I think it's in Jitters where he has headphones on and his mom's talking to him, but he hears everything she says. And then I think in, I think it's Craving where he hears something going on, like, under the stadium. But of course, no normal person could have heard that. So there's little instances here where I think that, yeah, they should have just gone with that. I think making a thing out of super hearing was not the best call. Probably because I just don't like that episode. I feel like it was very poorly executed. That probably taints the whole thing for me. But anyway, moving on from the superpower conversation, we cut to Luther Corp Plaza. Lucas has Lex tied up, and Lionel tells Lucas to put the gun down because Lucas has a gun pointed at Lex, and Lex kind of he finds out that Lionel can see, right? But that's an act, right? Because clearly, as we find out, this whole situation has been orchestrated, as we've been hinting about this whole episode, where Lucas has kidnapped Lex, and he has a gun, and he has another gun, and he gives the other gun to Lionel, and he tells Lionel he's gonna kill Lex. So that way, you know, as Lex explains to Lionel here in this stage scenario, that you kill me, he kills you, he inherits everything. Way to go, Dad. You know? so that's the whole setup here. So I would have thought, you know, maybe on their car ride down to Luther Corp Plaza from Smallville, that Lucas would have filled in Lex that Lionel isn't really blind. But it is a nice reveal, because you don't know. Because at this point, Lucas is kind of a wild card. So, you know, when he knocked out Jonathan Kent and, like, approached Lex, you didn't know what he was going to do, right? So at this point, you know, watching this episode the first time through, you think, hey, maybe this is really going down like this. What did you guys think?
When he knocked out Jonathan Kent, that had to be the point where him and Lex concocted this whole thing, right?
Right.
I'm so distracted in this scene because he holds the gun sideways. It looks so stupid to me. It looks so stupid to me. I mean, I watched it tonight, and just the whole, I'm looking at him like, why are you holding the gun? Like, well, he's supposed to be like well-rounded for an 18-year-old. Right. You know, imagine how to hold a gun.
Well, yeah, he's holding like you would hold a gun at an arcade, right?
Yeah.
But he looks so cool doing it, holding it sideways. Right? No,
that's what he was trying to do.
Looks gangster.
He's trying to make his brother like, look, who's cool now?
Maybe that was a hint that there were blanks in it, right? Maybe you know. No, I think they just wanted to look cool. But, you know, everything that's going on here is a little confusing, and it even confused the director, because Greg Beeman, he says, I don't think I ever understood what Lex and Lucas' plan was to defeat Lionel.
I was just about to ask that.
In that big scene in the end, I did a lot of shuffling photographically to keep the audience's mind off it. I used long lenses with the camera moving up and drifting, which added tension and edginess. And he's so true. Like, okay, so Clark overheard what was going to go down. So he has gone to Luther Corp Plaza, broken in. I mean, he's done it before, right? I guess the good thing there's no security cameras at Luther Corp Plaza, right? But Clark has crawled his way into the air duct. So he's right over the office of, you know, Lionel's office at Luther Corp. He sees all this going down. He sees that
he is very quiet for going through an air duct. Like, you can hear things in air ducts.
There's important things going on here. Their attention is not on the air ducts. Okay, it's not like the Asian security guard at the casino where he's like, I heard a noise in that room, I better go check it out. There's life or death situations going on here. So if Clark had not shown up, and he uses his heat vision through an air grate to cause Lucas to drop the gun, right? Because at this point, Lucas has given Lionel the ultimatum. Kill Lex, or I'm going to kill you, or both, right? So Clark uses his heat vision. Lucas drops his gun. Lionel's like, you psychotic little bastard! And he just starts shooting him, not knowing the gun has blanks in it. Lucas has a great line. I guess it's in the jeans. And then he gets up, he unties Lex. And Lex is like, let's get out of here, Lucas. And they walk out, and, you know, Lucas reveals that both guns had blanks. We played you, Lionel. You know, mic drop, and they leave. But if Clark had not been there and Lucas hadn't dropped the gun, what were they going to do? Like, they were just, like, Lionel was going to act like he was going to shoot Lucas and be like, ha-ha, blanks? Like, I don't, well, you know, what are your thoughts?
Seriously? I have no idea. Like, I was thinking about it after watching. It's like, if Clark wasn't there, the only thing that probably would have happened is that Clark would have not known that he's not blind, and then but I honestly don't know. Like, even Clark screwed up because he uses his heat vision and left traces behind. But I played that scene multiple times in my mind, and I can't figure out what they were going to do.
Well, I mean, Clark is the main character of Smallville, right? I mean, he is the main character, and they want him to be the center of the action of all the episodes. And, you know, they get away from this for better and for worse in various forms in later seasons. But the scene actually, you almost didn't even need Clark here, right? You didn't even need him in this confrontation. But they need him to be there to kind of resolve all his, you know, he has this thing against Lucas. He doesn't know where he stands. He wants to know what's going on with Lex and Lionel. He accused Lionel of trying to kill Lucas. So Clark has, you know, he's tied himself into the story. If Clark is not there to witness this final confrontation, it's very open-ended and unsatisfying for him. But other than that, there is really no reason for him to be there, because he really makes no difference. The outcome would have been exactly the same without him there.
He's really only there to confirm his suspicions.
Right.
About Lucas, and he doesn't really confirm about Lionel killing the guy, but yeah, Lionel does try to kill his son in front of him.
Yeah, and you know, and as confusing as the scene is, all credit to Greg Beeman. He really directs it well, where he's right. It is tense, and there is edginess to it. And it's, you know, if you don't know what's going to happen, you're like, oh, man, like, what is going to happen here? You assume Lucas is going to be the one that ends up dead, right? Because he's the guest star.
Right.
Right.
And the tension when it's like, oh, what is he going to do? Is he going to jump down? Is Clark going to jump down and stop it and then reveal himself? And then it's like, oh, wait, no, laser vision.
It's heat vision. It's not laser vision, Nick.
Heat vision.
There is a difference, man.
There is a difference, because you don't see the lasers coming out of his eyes.
No, they're not lasers.
You see heat coming out of his eyes. I understand.
His optic blast. Yes, that's Cyclops. So, yeah, the traces of the air grate that drip down that Lionel notices, that's interesting. Just another thing for Lionel to file away, you know, in his secret Clark Kent folder, which we know he has. Well, he has to start over now because Clark burned it in Insurgents. But
unless he already knows because of Veritas.
See, yeah, okay. That very interesting idea at the time, tying season 7, tying together all the families, the Queens, the Swans, the Luthers, you know. But all this intrigue in seasons 2 and 3 of Lionel trying to figure out what Clark's all about kind of undercut when he was, like, expecting the Traveler and, in fact, looking for him in Smallville the day of the meteor shower, right? So I don't know. Like, that's why I'm very interested to revisit season 7 to see how well that stuff fits in. I'll tell you what doesn't fit in. You know, we saw one of those stained glass windows break in this episode when Lucas threw the pool ball through it. But for them to act like that Veritas symbol was there the whole time is just insulting to me. You know, and the Luther stained glass, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? The Luther coat of arms or whatever, the L on it. That did not have the Veritas symbol there the whole time. How dare you try to convince me that it's like the worst retcon ever. But Taylor, do you think, I mean, you watched them all like a week apart. So did Veritas fit with what you had seen previous in your opinion?
If it would have had the symbol on the window, it would be awesome. But the first time I seen it, I went back and looked. Wasn't there. I was kind of like, what the hell? I went on YouTube, just looked for Smallville season 1 scenes, mm-hmm. for looking for the glass window in one of Lex's scenes. I found one, wasn't there. I was kind of really disappointed.
Deal breaker.
I liked the part of Veritas where I just liked John Glover and Michael and Tom's scenes together. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the Veritas storyline, really. I just liked that it brought them all together.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, the Luthers, I think anyone, if you love the show, if you hate the show, if you're apathetic towards the show, I think everyone would agree, Michael Rosenbaum's Lex Luthor and John Glover's Lionel Luthor are the two best things from Smallville. Like, if nothing else, if everything else was garbage, and it's not, there's a lot of great stuff in Smallville, right? But if everything else was garbage, the show's existence will be justified just by the fact of those guys doing their thing as the Luthers. I mean, they're just so good. And that's what makes episodes like this so good, because we get to see them with all the interplay with each other and this new third character who comes in and shakes up the dynamic. And, man, just, the Luthers, they make Smallville for me.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you guys, how do you guys feel about Paul Wesley playing a Luther? Do you think he fits in?
Well, he's playing a kind of a different Luther, right? Because, you know, Lex obviously was raised by Lionel, so they're coming from the same world. Lucas is more like a street smart Luther. I mean, you see him doing the card shark stuff, or card cheating stuff. I guess sharks don't cheat, do they? I don't know. But he's running these gambling schemes and whatnot, and he obviously has a chip on his shoulder from being, you know, abandoned by his parents. I mean, he tries to play it cool. you know, but you can tell that, like, it really does bother him under the surface. He's jealous of Lex. He's jealous of Clark having a, you know, a normal life and stuff like that. You know, he's kind of like the rebel without a cause, James Dean kind of guy, right? Maybe that's what inspired his leather jacket look in this episode.
Yeah. I was about to say, that's probably why they gave him a leather jacket.
Like, yeah. So I think to that, he's playing a very different Luther than we see before or after in Smallville. But I think he plays the part well. And obviously the WB like what they saw because they gave him a, you know, his own show in the Vampire Diaries. So no, I thought he was great.
Despite the fact that it was another L name and it kept confusing me, it's like there's Lucas, Lionel, and Lex. His acting made me, I thought he was in Luther. Like, but then you were explaining he was more street smart, and it's like, and that's why I liked him as a Luther, because it was a different type of Luther, and it felt like it completed like all the tropes that the Luthers could be. So he really fit well in this episode. The whole brotherly, what's it called? The brotherly rivalry with Clark was actually really well done there too. So I really enjoyed him as a Luther.
So would you have liked to see him appear again on Smallville, Nick?
I would have loved to.
So I ask you that now, because this is Lucas's last scene of the entire series. They walk out of the office, and I was expecting like a tag scene somewhere with the two of them. When I got the DVD, right, I'm like, oh, a deleted scene. I bet this is an extra scene with Lucas at the end, kind of wrapping things up. No, it's not. It's from earlier. So,
him safe, gave him to Earth 10, and became lead for Vampire Diaries. That's how.
is that what Earth that takes place on Earth 10?
I don't know.
Earth 10.
So, what are your thoughts on Lucas Luther then? Taylor, I mean, he doesn't, they don't even mention him again. And unless I'm wrong, if you guys remember, you know, Taylor, Nick, anyone listening, please let me know. But to my knowledge, Lucas Luther is not even mentioned again for the next 8.5 years of this show. And it's such a missed opportunity. And, you know, I talked to Craig Byrne about this. I'm like, hey, was there like a reason he didn't come back? He's like, oh, man, I think they just forgot about him. You know, Craig Brent from Krypton's side, he's the guy, he's the go-to guy as far as Smallville trivia goes. They made such a big deal out of this character, right? They built him up, you know, and for a couple episodes before this, it was a big payoff for him to get here. Lex and Lionel's whole rivalry is about like, well, I'm your only heir, Dad, and I'm your son, and this and that, right? And that drives so much of their interactions together. And then you throw in this wild card, this other son, a great idea, right? Because a guy like Lionel, we know he's slept around, you know, he's had some illegitimate children, and you know, we meet more of them as the series progresses, right? So it tracks well with what we know of the Luthers and the Luther world, and this is a great character, and the setup here is great, and like Prodigal, this is a great episode setting up this character, right? It's like, okay, cool, now he exists, we know who he is, I look forward to seeing what they do with him in the future, and they don't do anything with him. So Taylor, what would you have liked to see them do with Lucas Luther after this episode?
The first time watching it, I thought he was going to be in at least, you know, a couple episodes for the rest of the season. And, like, they'd kill him off or something at the end of the season. Like, he doesn't show up ever again. And it's one of the things I'm most disappointed about with Smallville. That he's, at least, he's never mentioned, like you said, he's never mentioned again. Even when Tess comes around or Lionel comes back, or not comes back, but he comes around again. Mm-hmm. As a good guy, nothing ever happens with Lucas again, and it's just
they never say anything like Lucas died somewhere or
no. That would no. Be...
I wish they did.
I cannot believe they didn't have at least one line of dialogue establishing what happened to this character. Like, this is my favorite. And I use the favorite in quotes, right? This is my favorite Smallville dropped plot line. Like, this is a huge deal. Lex Luthor's brother. Right? He's just gone. Lex Luthor's sister is a main character for the last three seasons of this show. You know, where is his brother? He's cloning brothers. He's cloning Lana. I mean, like, where is Lucas Luthor in the rest of this show? Give us something. I don't know if it's an availability issue. If Paul Wesley, he's on the WB. He's on a show. In fact, he's still on a show. That Vampire Diaries is still on right now, right? So he's obviously in good
final
standing.
Season.
Yeah, it's wrapping up. It's not going to overtake
Supernatural. Maybe we'll find out in the final season.
Now, look, I have not read all of the comics or all of the books. You know, this extra material, we will cover that on the podcast down the road when we're done with the actual episodes of the show. Maybe there's a short story in there explaining something, but I cannot believe, like, the importance of this character, for them to not even mention him again is just mind-boggling. And I'm curious. I'll keep looking through, you know, interviews and quotes and stuff to see if this question is ever addressed by anyone. Like, hey guys, why did you go to all the trouble setting up this, you know, character and then just completely ignore his existence?
I thought it was Tess ends up getting the Luther what do you call it, estate, mm-hmm. Everything. Wouldn't Lucas get that? Because he's in the. It makes no sense.
I wanted to say maybe there was a line somewhere in like season 6 or 7 or 8 or 3. You know, well, immediately, okay, spoilers for, you know, end of season 2, right? Lex is presumed dead, right? So that would have been a great time to bring Lucas back, right? I mean, like, if he's dead, have him show up at his funeral, have him, like, take over some part of Luther Corp. I don't know. That's how you introduce him. And it would have been fresh, right? This is episode 15 of season 2, right? So we're talking less than 10 episodes away. You know, people still remember who he is. Like, I get when they got back down all the way down to, like, season 8. They're like, this was so far in the past, so far in the rearview mirror, they, like, didn't even want to go there again. But if you're that close, it's just there were so many obvious ways to bring him back, right? And they just never did, and it just, I will never understand the reasoning there. So anyway, I mean, there's my rant. So
yeah, I would have loved like a whole arc of him trying to come back and take over the company. Like, he figures out Clark's secret and he uses it or something like that. You guys are completely right. There's like missing potential there, and unfortunately we never get it.
It's like endless possibilities all squandered for this character. So but I guess to answer your question, yes, Paul Wesley did fine, Taylor.
Paul, he did so fine that we wished he was in more.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we have our wrap-up scenes here. Clark comes to the town to apologize for, you know, cutting out early. And they have an understanding. Like, Lana's not even mad, okay? She's like, they just have an understanding here that, yeah, this is not going to work out. And continuity points here, because Clark says, well, shortest career in the coffee business. And Lana says, nope, don't forget, I only lasted one day at the beanery. I'm like, oh, good job, Sloan.
I was very proud. I actually clapped during the episode when I saw that. It's like, oh, good, bravo.
We all just went on a collective rant about how they forgot Lucas Luther's existence, but they remember Lana worked at the beanery for one day in Hothead. So well done, show. Oh man, the continuity is so schizophrenic, I swear. But anyway, Clark says to Lana, I hope this doesn't change things between us. You know, him, you know, working there and not working out. And then she tells him, I don't see how things are ever going to change between us, Clark. See, now this is proper follow-up to what happened in the last episode of Rush, right? Because, I mean, that seems more like, okay, look, you're screwy. I cannot trust you with anything, clearly. So this is like, we're going to stay friends, and that's just the way it's going to be. That is good follow-up, as opposed to her attitude through most of this episode. But anyway, that's just my take on it. And, you know, she's, you know, he walks off, and you get one of those classic Smallville wide shot panning outs, and she's cleaning up the talent, right? And I noticed that the last table that she busts is an octagon. So maybe Jonathan Kent was right, and it's a common shape after all. So I took great enjoyment after seeing that octagon-shaped table. We get our final wrap-up here with Lex and Lionel, and funny moment here that they're taking all this junk that Lucas had brought in, and like all the, you know, all the workers or whatever, the Luther Mansion staff, right? And they're about to take the big screen TV, and Lex is like on the phone, he's like, oh, wait, you guys can leave that. I thought that was funny, him leaving the big screen TV. Then Lionel shows up, and they reference a Daily Planet article on Lionel regaining his sight. And Lionel says, people love to read about triumph over adversity. So it's just so good. So good here. Lex asks Lionel, how long have you been able to see? And Lionel says, a few weeks. So what do you guys have any thoughts or theories on when he might have regained his sight? Why don't you start, Taylor?
What's the episode when... He's kind of... What was the last episode he's in? he wasn't in the episode before this, right?
No, so I believe, yeah, it'd be Suspect, where he gets shot.
Suspect?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem like he has his vision there.
Right.
It's hard to, so it's really hard to tell. I have to say it's between that, then and now, because mm-hmm. I don't think we see it on screen.
Yeah. What about you, Nick?
No, I have to agree. I felt like I wish they built it up a little bit more throughout episodes, but I felt like this was the first episode where we saw this. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe he could see the whole time, and they just never hinted it until now.
Now, I think he truly was blind after Vortex. Now, when he regained his sight, some people speculate maybe a Nocturne when he gets thrown across the field. But most people seem to speculate that it was in Suspect. Like, whatever that kind of jump-started his optic nerve or his recovery from that gave him his sight back in some way. Or, you know, the third option wasn't really an incident that we saw on screen. It's just, you know, his level 3 experiments and kryptonite and all that. He used some nefarious experimentation to regain his sight, but regardless, he got it back, and you know, and I'm glad he did. Can you imagine the rest of Smallville if Lionel stayed blind?
Yeah, I feel like that could have been that. Maybe that was like a plot device, and then they realized, okay, maybe we shouldn't have done this, and well, they rewrote it.
I think it was you're absolutely right. I think it was a plot device, and I think okay, I think it's played its course. Let's get Lionel back, you know, hardcore Lionel.
And this was a great way to bring it back, too.
The scene where he brings it back is one of my favorite scenes of this whole season.
Yeah. Now, was that your favorite scene of the episode? I know you mentioned it.
Yeah, it was. It really cemented Lucas as a Luther, you know, throwing the freaking pool ball at him.
Yeah.
And Lionel finally showing his sight is back was, it was a big deal for the season.
So then, you know, after they get their pleasantries out of the way, they exchange some barbs, as they always do. You know, they get down to brass tacks, and, you know, this whole Lucas drama was about Lex trying to get LexCorp back from Lytle, because Luther Corp had reabsorbed it. Lex wants it back, so they sit down, and the best I can gather, and you guys help me out here, best I can gather is Lex gets LexCorp back, he stays quiet about the whole Lucas affair, and Lucas stays under Lex's protection. That is my understanding of what happens here. Does that track with you guys, too?
It seems like it. Does this also explain away why Lucas doesn't ever come up in the whole test getting the Luther inheritance then? Because what? Lex never even brings him around again or keeps him under the radar?
I don't know. You think Lucas Luther would, you know, follow the news about Lex Luther dying? It's like, well, maybe I should go claim some inheritance. So, but here, though, this is another setup for more Lucas, right? He's like, Lionel says, your brother's not going to change. He's a sociopath, you know? And so that, you know, they're setting up the fact that even though Lex wants to believe his brother can, you know, be the brother he's always wanted that he thought he had in Julian before he died, or that he's kind of, you know, crafted Clark onto his family tree. You know, Lex is always looking for that somebody to trust, somebody to love, someone to be his brother, someone to be his equal, you know, his companion, you know? And he's looking for that in Lucas, and Lionel's trying to tell him, like, look, man, it's not going to work with this guy.
I know earlier we talked about how John and Lex, they finally, went two steps in the right direction mm-hmm. to be friends. And then, so does everyone know that, well, he does tell Clark that, wait, does he tell Clark that Lucas is under his protection now, too?
I don't think he tells Clark.
Yes, okay. Yeah, because, well, yeah, our next scene here is Clark and Lex wrapping everything up. We have the fight test by the Flaming Lips playing in the background. Flaming Lips, good band, good music, so good to hear that music here. This is even more set up for Lucas, because they're talking about, like, again, they're just talking about the brothers and all that stuff, so I just feel like this whole episode has been, like, a great setup for more to come from Lucas, which just makes it more disappointing, but we've already been on that rant, so, and I'm sure I'll continue to bring that up as the show, as we meet Julian Luther's clone, and Lutessa Lena Luther.
When there's a filler episode, it's terrible. Yeah. It's like, we could have just had another Lucas episode.
The next Red Kryptonite episode we get. So many, yeah. Replace it with Lucas, so, right?
What I'm trying to, like, bring back to the John and Lex things, like, can you imagine, though, John figuring out, it's like, wait, Lex is protecting the guy who knocked me out? what an ass.
Clark's probably gonna make an executive decision just and not tell Jonathan about that. But this is a classic Clark and Lex scene where they talk about their fathers, and Lex has a line to Clark. He says, "My father may try to rule the world, but yours will inherit the earth." So it's a callback to the end of I can't remember what episode it is exactly, but they have a conversation where Lex tells Clark, "Well, kings will come to my father's funeral, but when yours dies, his friends will come." And I cannot remember what episode that's in. I want to say maybe it's, I don't know, it's some episode in season one. It's like Drone or Reaper or, you know, forgive me, guys. There's 218 episodes, so give me a break. But
the one where, I think it's the one where Whitney's father dies, right? Is that the... Well, is that way they're talking about fathers dying right
that's
now?
That's Crush, but Whitney's father dies, and that's like the last scene, so there's no opportunity for that conversation. Oh, no. So I want to say it's like, because I think it happens like in the Talon, and that might be in Drone, because they're talking about Clark running for president, but why would they be talking about their dads then? I don't know.
I don't think it was Drone.
Because you and I did Drone together, right, Dick?
No. Yeah, we did Drone, and... I don't remember that line.
Could have been Reaper. Might have been Reaper.
Because it's talking about death.
Yeah, there's a lot of death and dads and all that in there. So it's probably Reaper. But I'll go back and listen to the podcast and kick myself when I pick the wrong episode. But anyway, this is a good version of, you know, I'm always harping on Smallville for repeating dialogue, right? This is them saying the same thing but in a different way. So credit there. And so that's the end of the episode, guys. So they're you know, in my head, I always remembered like a wide shot of like them sitting in a truck and then seeing like a shooting star go by. But I guess that was wrong because that did not happen. It's in this episode. I'm finding that I'm misremembering a few things about this show as I revisit it. So, but yeah, that's the end of the episode. That's the last mention we ever get of Lucas Luthor.
My mom told me you were going to come back and get the rest of your stuff.
Surprisingly, my dad's had a change of heart.
I'm sorry that Lucas didn't turn out to be the brother he wanted.
Considering his father, I'm surprised he's still alive at all.
Where's Lucas now?
Safe. But I'm going to have some work to do to regain his trust.
You will. You're not your father.
Sometimes, Clark, we're all held hostage by the will of our fathers. The only difference is your dad's a good man. All my father does is push people away. Your dad opened his home to me, no questions asked.
As long as I live, I don't think I'm ever going to understand your family.
Neither will I. Just remember, my father may try and rule the world, but yours will inherit the earth.
Prodigal got an 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman Hope page gave it a 5 out of 5. He says, this is what he had to say. It kind of ties into a lot of the things we've been saying here at the end. He says, "What I want to know is if Lucas will be around next week. If he isn't, I will bring down the hammer. He's too important to just forget. Will we see Lucas? Probably not." Still, all in all, this episode had a lot of great Luthor moments and a lot of great Luthor moments. He said that, what? He literally says, I'm reading, here we go. He says, still, all in all, this episode had a lot of great Luthor moments and a lot of great Luthor moments. I don't know if he's trying to be funny by repeating it because there were so many, or if that's just a typo.
That's what I was going to say. I think it might be for a joke.
Anyway.
It's like a my type of joke.
I know, right? And then he says, coupled with subplot resolution and good back-reaching subplot resolution at that, it adds up to a sum of 5 of 5, silly inconsistencies aside. So we've been having a lot of fun with the silly inconsistencies, okay? I mean... So I don't know, it might sound like we didn't like this episode, but I mean I did, and we know Taylor did. So Taylor, on the letter scale here that we do on Always on the Smallville, what would you give Prodigal?
I gotta give it an A+, man. It's my favorite of the series.
If it's your favorite, it's got to be an A-plus from you, man.
It's got to be an A-plus. Man, just for that Clark and Lex scene at the end alone, it was so great. I could watch that scene all the time. And the quotes.
Very, very quotable episode, that's for sure. So, what about you, Nick?
I wanted to give it A-plus, but I'm going to do A-minus because I have not finished the series, and I don't know if I'll come up with another episode. But I like this well-rounded episode. No, there wasn't a quote-unquote freak of the week with kryptonite powers, so it was just a nice Lex story, Lex-centric, and sprinkled in a little bit of Clark in it. But I enjoyed it. The dynamics between the group, there were Asian people in the episode, and the altogether, I couldn't keep a straight face when I said that, but altogether, A-.
A for Asian, right?
Yeah, there you go. Oh man, no, I should have gave it an A+ because A- would have done well for it's not a good grade for that.
And A- is like a C. Oh man, so for me, I'm gonna be a little more more critical. I'm gonna give this one a B+. It's hard because a lot of things just don't fit with everything around it. I know that's not the episode's fault, but they did know. You know, like, they did know, like, what was coming. You know, it wasn't complete. Oh, man, we got to... Oh, I didn't know that Clark was going to make out with Chloe in front of Lana last week. Oh, well, we just got to move forward with him Clark getting a job at the talent plot. Like, you could have planned that out better, you know, stuff like that. I feel like if they would have dropped that whole subplot and given us more Lucas, you know, more Lucas with everybody, right? More, I want to see interplay with, you know, what do the Kents think of Lucas, right? Let's see more of Lex and Lucas together before, you know, he turns on him and all that. So do you
think if they didn't include that shot of the rose that you would have given it a better grade?
You know, I very well may have been. That cost it an A, that stupid insert shot of that rose in the garbage can, because it throws off everything. It's supposed to be the next day, right? I mean, that's just like continuity wise, like I just cannot forgive the fact that so much happened in Rush to all these characters, right? And not to mention Clark was on his red kryptonite, not as big as a rampage as last time, but just all the aftermath of that.
It seemed like they were rushed.
Look at this guy. So I'm going to give it a B+. It was a good episode just independently, but on the greater whole, there were some fishy things. And again, you know, my other... we talk about Lucas Luthor a lot, and we also talk about, what do I talk about, guys? I talk about LexCorp a lot on this show.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, I was mistaken. They explained it all in Suspect. LexCorp is gone. Luthor Corp took it over now. So sorry, Smallville, you explained it. I was wrong. You were right. I stand corrected. Not the case, my friends, because in this episode, as we've established, LexCorp is back. LexCorp is apparently back, so now I'm going to be on the lookout for yet another explanation of how LexCorp disappears and gets reabsorbed into Luthor Corp. Please, everybody, keep an eye out for that and let me know when it happens. Because as of now, we are back to where we were at the start of Season 2, right? LexCorp should exist, right?
Right.
And again, not this episode's fault, but it's what we're talking about now, so I can't help it. I can't help but complain about it now. But... all that being said, yes, I agree with you guys. A lot of good, like, adult action here, Metropolis stuff, Luther stuff, you know, not a lot of high school, not a lot of kryptonite or meteor freaks, any of that, that they're nowhere to be found. You guys mentioned it, Neil Bailey mentioned it, so whenever Smallville can go outside of that box, it should, you know, be given credit for it. And yeah, just lots of potential here that sadly we never followed up on with the character of Lucas Luther. So we got an A+ from Taylor, an A- from Nick, and a B+ from me. So our last order of business, guys, is the series tally board. It's a short one this week. We only have a +1 for the episode title said in episode, and that's going to bring us up to 13. So 13 out of 36 episodes, you know, not, and you know,
it failed the Bechdel test, right?
It did fail the Bechdel test.
Yeah, because they were talking about
there's only one convo between the women,
Chloe and Lana, and they're of course talking about Clark. They're not talking about him in a romantic sense, but I mean, they're talking about him.
But they're still talking about him.
They're still talking about him. Those are the strict rules, the strict, vaguely defined rules of the Bechdel test clearly state that this is a fail. So that's what we got, guys. This made up for last time, because I don't know, last week, the tally board was insane for Rush, so it's nice to have a little less math to do this week, tallying everything up, so... anyway, that's going to do it for us this week on Always Hold On to Smallville. Taylor, man, thanks so much for taking the time being on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. So if people want to find you on the internet, man, where can they find you? Do you have a Twitter handle, perhaps?
Yes, I do. That's more where I am, too. I have a Facebook, but I barely use it. So find me on Twitter at, for anyone who's ever seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because I watch tons of teen drama. The villain in that show, Angelus, it's like Angel U-S-T-A-E. That's my Twitter handle.
Yeah, man. So thanks for being a fan. Thanks for writing in. Thanks for contributing thoughts on your favorite episode. I'm glad this could work out because you could be part of the conversation,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here too. This was great.
Thank you, guys.
Sure thing, man. So Nick, people want to find you on the internet. Where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Nick Ryan, N-I-C-K-R-Y-A-N, and on Instagram, N-I-C-K-R-Y-A-N.jpg, like a photo.
Like a photo. I prefer BMPs myself, but, you know, it's a discussion for another time. So as for me personally, you can find me at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's M-O-O-R-E-O-N-Z-A-C-H. As for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, or you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, thanks again to Nick and Taylor for being my guests this week, and stay tuned next time where we talk about the next episode of Smallville, which name escapes me. It's Fever. There we go. Can't be.
well, the next fresh episode. Yes.
So, yeah, we'll be talking about Lance Lasseter. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk some Fever. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
Test is over.